Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Let's take a few minutes just to ground, center ourselves. Take a couple of deep breaths. I know I've been running around like a chicken with his head cut off this morning, so I need this as well as you do. Stretch yourself a little bit, breathe more deeply than you normally would. Feel some of that tension dropping off. Allow yourself to settle into a relaxed, open state of consciousness. Know that you will learn whatever it is you need to learn this morning. Even though it might be on an unconscious level, it'll be there. Allow your heart to open in gratitude. For this spaciousness, this openness, this divinity that we open ourselves to this morning. Get in touch with the rhythm of your breathing. Beating of your heart. And stretch a bit. Open your eyes when you're ready. Thanks, Sharon. Okay. Any stuff left over from past readings or classes that you want to explore or need to look at? Always open to that. I presume that's a no. Let's see, we are on page, or I'm on page 54. Does that sound right? I guess there's no objections. Perfectly okay. Well, we have a beautiful spring day here in Louisville. Almost summertime. I can't wait to sit out in the sun after the service is over. Suck up that sunshine, suck up that warmth. Ah, yes. We're almost heading into Derby week, aren't we? Kind of caught me by surprise this year. Okay. Page 54. Two separate labels here on these pages, identity and memory. begins this morning by asking the question, what does it mean to know the self as divine? I know we talked about that last week, and most of us expressed a little bit of discomfort at claiming our divinity. I know Laura mentioned that it's a lot easier for her to claim herself as being a being of light rather than a divine being. Somehow or another, we have to ask the question, excuse me, am I really willing to go that far to claim that I am a, well, I have to soften it up a little bit. When I say I am a unique expression of divine experience, that sounds nice, but it's rather heady. It's almost a way of cushioning the truth. If I were to simply say, I am divine, kind of where does that leave me? Is that okay? Okay for me to say that? Okay for me to believe that? What does it mean to know the self as divine? What it does not mean is that you're having a happy day and you say, oh, I must be in the upper room. Like when we speak those words, I'm always reminded of a piece from a Disney movie called Song of the South, where this old black man is singing zippity-doo-dah, and butterflies come out and leaf flowers pop out and little birds start singing and all sorts of wonderful. I think that's what they're getting at. This is not an emotional state of mind. It's nice to have that. There's no objection to that one. Nice to have it. It's nice, great when it shows up. First of all, it doesn't last. Springtime, and then the summer, and then this fall, and then this winter. And it's more an emotional state of mind than a knowing. And again, I don't want to discount the emotional part of things because that's a real gift. I don't want to hold on to it too long because it's not going to last. Nothing lasts in the material world. And I just want to be aware of that. We were quoting you a couple minutes ago, Laura, about when we were having a difficult time claiming our divinity. You were saying last week that it's a lot easier for you to say, I'm a being of light, I'm filled with light, rather than I'm filled with divine consciousness.
Yes.
And I'm not sure what the difference is, but I can understand the claiming you're making. I do. The way Jesus put it was to Father, may they all be one just as you and I are one. In other words, may they know their oneness with you just as I know my oneness with you. And that's a little bit more comfortable for me because it almost says we're not quite there yet. But the question that the guys are asking this way, how do you know when you're there? What it does not mean is that you're having a happy day and you say, oh, I must be in the upper room. There's not a cloud in the sky. And the moment something difficult happens, you deny God in the experience and in yourself. Or I would say, and that's rather harsh language, I would say you forget. And maybe I'm cushioning that for myself as well. But I don't think I deliberately come out and say I deny God, but I forget the godness of this moment. Your realization of divinity is in fact a restorative act. In other words, it's the realization of something that's always been there. It never went away. You never stopped being an aspect of the divine. You might have forgotten, You never stop being that. Excuse me. Your realization of divinity is, in fact, a restorative act. Understand this, all of you. You are being restored, reclaimed, and resurrected. You are being granted the kingdom, but you cannot embody in the kingdom when memory itself serves to distort your true nature or what you perceive and the body itself known by you in memory. That freckle I always disliked, that challenge I never got over, the perfection that I aspire to that I can never meet, all held in memory, all informing you, your experience of being. So I need to ask myself the question, what gets in the way of me claiming my divine inheritance? And that might vary from day to day, but I think it's an important question to ask. What is getting in the way of my truth? What is getting in the way of my acceptance of the truth of who I am? Just sit with that one for a minute. Don't know about you, but it's still a little bit uncomfortable. Pardon me?
Don't I eat, get in our way?
Yeah. Yeah, Jean.
It's also an element of unworthiness.
Ah, there's the old bugaboo.
Fair.
Oh Lord, I am not worthy. Well, see, most of us were taught that when we even what is that line from Cat Stevens' song? From the moment I could talk, I was ordered to listen. Isn't that great? So here I am being ordered, and listening to the order that's given me is, you are not this. God is out there, not in here. Or what were we saying a moment ago? I learned, or I was taught separation much more before I was taught unity consciousness. So even where I am today, well, where I am today, I still have a lot of catching up to do. Because the stuff that we might have learned when we were very young, spiritually speaking, was that God was out there and we were down here someplace. And that the ultimate truth was not unity consciousness, but we are separate from that. We're separate from one another. Look at them over there. They're a different color than we are. They come from a different country than we are. And so we learned, I learned, probably true for you as well, but let me claim it myself. I learned much more about separateness than I did about oneness. And so today, when I'm introduced to the idea of the sense of unity consciousness again, I stop for a minute and say, you know, is it, I know that's true, but can I really claim that for myself yet? Completely. And I think that's the theme that we're dealing with this morning, is can I claim my oneness? Can I believe my oneness? Can I live in my oneness rather than separation? See, if I look at all your faces right now, I could say I see a whole bunch of separate beings who are studying it, who are studying the same thing. But that's not true. Because on Sunday mornings and on Tuesday evenings and on Friday evenings when we get together, and maybe other times when we do that, I see past the disguise that we're wearing. I could say, I see you I see you more in your oneness, in your unity consciousness, than I do in your separation. And there's some, we've talked about this before, but I still think it needs emphasis, is that there's something that, how do I want to put this? There's something that happens, or that we let go of or open ourselves to on Sunday mornings, that makes Sunday morning from 10 to 11 a little bit different than Sunday morning from 9 to 10 or 11 to 12. And I can't define that for you. I just know that that's true. And maybe we can put it in terms of what they're talking about in the book. Maybe that is us claiming our divine consciousness that goes beyond our physical reality and being in that place and being okay with that place. Lord, it is good for us to be here. I can let go of my attachments. I can let go of who I think I am. I can just simply be. Is it okay just to be? Should I be being something or being someone? Ram Dass describes it as going into people training. People start telling us who we are. They don't know who they are, but they start telling us who we are. He said it's developing a sense of being somebody, somebodyness, he calls it. The other side of the picture is becoming nobody. When I'm nobody, I just am. I am, the best way he could put it was that I am divine consciousness. I am loving awareness, were the words he used. I am loving awareness, period. I am loving awareness. How about trying that on for size? I am loving awareness. Don't worry about God, old images of God, old ideas about God, just the truth of who you are. I am loving awareness. Your experience of being. Your experience of being a being, of being open to your beingness. Underline that, your experience of being. It is at issuance here. Some of you mandate that what you have known must be correct because you invested a whole lot of time and energy into it. If you believe a lie hard enough, that does not make it true. And many of you would rather invest in a lie than be reclaimed or offer the self to be reclaimed in what we call the upper room, for the very simple reason that your sense of identity is predicated on the lie that is born in separation and seeks more and more evidence to confirm itself as separate from the source. We don't do that consciously. Since we've taught that and we've been taught that and learned that from a very young age, we seek to prove that in some ways. I mean, all you got to do is flip on the TV, not even watch the news, watch anything. And it's entertainment is all about being separate. Is it okay not to be separate? Is it okay to be one?
Teacher, I was thinking this morning. We're also taught not to trust in free will.
I need you to speak up just a little bit more.
I think we're taught you can't trust free will. Free will gets you in trouble.
Free will get you in trouble. How so?
Free will tends to be, if it's free, it might be original. And it's like there's a distrust of anything original. There will always be somebody that says, oh, yeah. Think that's.
Oh yeah, but
But.
okay. Free will is always a somewhat of a conundrum. We have a choice to we have the ability to choose oneness or separation. Marianne Williamson had an interesting take on that when she said, because eventually what's going to happen is we're all going to be one, we're all going to realize our oneness. That's inevitable. Depends on how many lifetimes we take to get there, right? But we are all going to accept that. That's going to be the ultimate truth that you can't get away from. Marianne Williamson put it so simply. She said, God will eventually outsmart your self-hatred. Or God will eventually outsmart your sense of separateness. Because the God knows, interesting phrase, God knows that it's not true. And eventually, we will all come to that complete realization. Today we see, as Paul said, today we see as like through a mirror darkly. Then we shall see face to face. So we have our moments. I have my moments. I'll claim it myself. I have my moments of awareness of oneness. You allow me to do this on Sunday mornings. I don't sit down and say, well, here's what we're going to talk about Sunday morning. I feel blessed in just simply being able to let it happen. And whatever comes out, comes out. I know it's going to be somewhat of a reflection of my own truth, and you can accept that as part of yours if you want to, but there's no have-tos involved with that. But I do know eventually, well, as she said, God will eventually outsmart your self-hatred. In the Buddhist tradition, there is a school called the Mahayana, which is sometimes translated as being the big boat or the great vessel. And the philosophy behind it is the boat doesn't leave until everybody's on it. In other words, the boat doesn't leave until everybody recognizes their oneness. In the Course in Miracles, there's an image. I know I've said this before, but I'm probably saying it again for my sake. There's an image of Jesus, the Christ consciousness, standing in a doorway. And on one side of the doorway is oneness with the Father, just complete Father Deo Memu, letting go of everything that might smack of separateness. And the Christ is waiting at the door, and souls or spirits are walking through the door and being embraced by the oneness of the Father. And he said, I already know that I am one with the Father. But I'm not going through this door until everybody else is through. I am standing by the doorway until everybody else is through. The boat doesn't leave until everybody's on. God will eventually outsmart your self-hatred. You are one with the Father, whether you realize it or not. And all we are waiting for is you to have the ability or the gumption or the free will, all right, to claim your truth. Because eventually free will is going to decide my oneness. Am I going to let go or release myself into the oneness with the Father? How long does that take? This lifetime, the next one, next one, next one. And the Christ consciousness would say, doesn't matter. Eventually you're going to get there. Eventually, you're going to realize you are already there. Let's see, that's another catch. You're not inventing something. That's what I think that's what the book was saying a moment ago. can find it again. For the simple reason that you're a sense of identity. I can't find the place right away, but what it was getting at was we're not inventing something when we talk about oneness with the Father. We are exposing that ourselves to that. The truth is already there. We're not creating something that wasn't there before. I think this will explain that in a minute, this next paragraph. The true self, you see, already comprehends this. And the body itself also comprehends what it is formed from. But you must align to that knowing, not in an intellectual way, but in a realized way. Realization is knowing, and the knowing of the body as of God does not dismiss your experiences, but it washes away the residue of the dark wave that has tainted your idea of form. We've learned too, there's something wrong with having a body. The world of flesh and the devil. I remember I grew up with that one. So did you probably. Remember that one? The Baltimore Catechism. You know what was weird about that was that on one line from the Catholic Catechism that many of us grew up with, said that you have a divine soul that is made in the image and likeness of God. Wow. Made in the image and likeness of God. But you know, it never did anything. The world of flesh and the devil seems so much more powerful than my soul, my spirit that live forever. And I couldn't quite figure that out as a kid. How could this be? That the world and the flesh and the devil, full of all sorts of temptations and horrible, wonderful experiences, could be more powerful than having a divine soul that lives in the image and likeness of God. Could never quite get that one because the soul did not seem to have any energy. It was nice. It was there. It was wonderful. But it didn't seem to do anything.
Did you drop outside?
No. Close the door.
So it took a couple of lifetimes to get to that point where I realized my soul has power of choice. That's really where the free will comes in. Do you choose separateness or do you choose oneness? You're entitled to choose either one. But when I recognize that my soul can choose oneness, choosing separation isn't that much fun anymore. Yeah.
Jerry, when you say we're made in the image and likeness of God, isn't Jesus the only one that ever saw God?
That's what we were taught.
Yes. Yes. So, do we give God our futures then, something that we can associate with, when really God is the divine essence behind everything?
Mm-hmm.
But I always thought, as young, I remember thinking, what does God look like?
The name, well, the best we can do that is Jesus was God in form. And I'm not talking about the personal human Jesus, I'm talking about the Christ consciousness. Jesus represented the Christ consciousness in form, in physical form. And basically said, you are too, if you'd only realize that. You get so caught up in who you think you, who you, you get so caught up in who you were told you were that you forget who you really are. That might be the best way to put it right now. You get so caught up in what you were told you were, you forgot the truth of who you are. And see, when we gather together on Sunday mornings, nobody's waving a flag and saying, hey, look at me, I'm the Christ consciousness. We just are. And I could be, I'm just speaking for myself here. There's a sense of peacefulness, a sense of orderliness, a sense of love, a sense of compassion, a sense of understanding, a sense of unity consciousness that is present here that we don't ordinarily experience in, quote, the outside world. You know, like right now, we've got a
I'm going
bunch
to
of
take
people
them home.
sitting here right now.
Okay.
We got a number of people at home.
Going to take them home soon. I just
And
want to
then
come
about
home.
okay.
But they're gonna come over this week because Ace is on spring break.
Okay.
Hello. We got some external noise coming in.
I think that's Lou Hobbs.
I got to turn you down a little bit, Paula. Sorry about that. Okay. Where was I? Does it matter? What?
Do you think that will come to be a time where we get past? Well, it's probably my thing. First, there is no more free will because we already are in the choice of God. So we do pass the point of free will to heaven.
Yeah, see that's kind of a hook,
Yeah.
but I do think we're still making the choice to be one with the Father, but we realize there is no other choice because everything is one with the Father anyway.
Well, I'll be glad to get to the point where there is. We don't even have to think about a choice. The choice has already been.
It's already been made for us.
Well, you think about a handicapped person, a granddaughter, do they make a choice?
Yeah, I believe so.
Oh, you think so?
Oh, definitely. I mean, we have a granddaughter who's a special needs kid. She has a physical condition called leukodystrophy, which is the deterioration of white matter in the brain and in the spinal cord. So she can't talk, wears diapers, fed through a tube. When she was first diagnosed years ago, when she was about 2 or 3 years old, the physician said, she's not going to live past five. She's 21 right now. And I can remember her mom saying, I'm choosing, I am going to prove them wrong. Now that's Margaret's trip, the mom. Now, I have to say, it's also Aoife's trip because she decided, I believe, I've got work to do here. You might not be aware of it, but I have work to do here. And part of that has to do with my work with my family. Part of that has to do with my own karma. Part of that has to do with maybe various other sources of stuff. But that's one of the reasons I'm not just hanging around. I'm doing my work here. You might not see what that is, but I affect. Let me just give me an example. She goes to school practically every day, which is physical therapy and speech therapy and a whole number of other things. And she goes to school with a number of different kids, some of whom are younger, some are older. When they first brought her to this, quote, classroom, it was a little girl who was about probably 15 or 16 years old, who almost clung to Aoife like a magnet. She just went bam. And when I heard that story, I thought to myself, who's learning what? Who's the teacher here? Who's the learner? Because somehow or another, this 16-year-old little girl realized here is someone who is very, my interpretation, Here is someone who is very close to complete innocence. And I feel so beat up or so wounded in my life. I am so attracted to this other being that somehow or another has gone past holding on to blame, shame, and guilt. And that might be happening more than once. So I do believe that each one of us has a choice like that that we're making. She certainly does. I know I can't understand that with my thinking mind, but I still believe it's true. Make sense?
Maybe also part of the energetic exchange between people that she's.
Oh, definitely.
As I saw, I mean, working with a lot of children that didn't have cognitive function.
Mm-hmm.
But there was somebody who experienced that. And many times, the parents' love kept that person.
Mm-hmm.
Many times.
And so there's learning that goes on both sides.
Yeah.
And there's healing that's going on both sides. And there's no telling sometimes exactly what that is, but you get a sense or a feel something is happening here, right? Beyond my human understanding. Yeah.
Is that what the book? I mean, it's vibrational.
Vibrational accord. I think you certainly could call it that. Mm-hmm.
Vibration. Or talking about energy. Sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Sharing that.
Yeah, I think that shows up in so many different ways. I know I've shared this before, but the older I get, the more I repeat some of the same old stories. But when I first saw Margot, first words out of my mouth, we've known one another before.
Are you even conscious of saying that?
Oh, certainly not. No. It was like, oops. I said, I'm a monk. I'm not allowed to say things like that to, especially to a woman. We've known one another before, but there was certainly a vibration there. It wasn't a thought. It wasn't an intellectual idea. There was a vibe there, as we would have said in the '60s. All right, that pushed me somehow or another to express that in a way that I was far beyond my comprehension. And I think you had lunch with Margot some, I know you've had lunch with her a couple of times, and talked about our relationship and how that was certainly a different vibration than most in some level of our being. So we're talking to bring it back home here. Notice the vibrational difference between oneness and separation. So this is not going to be our meditation, but let's just take a moment and do that. I'd like you to close your eyes for a minute. Take a couple of deep breaths. Oneness. I am one with the Father. Separation. What does that feel like? I don't mean that as an emotion. When I say from oneness, separation. What's the difference? What do you sense is the difference between those two? anybody before we close up? Difference between oneness, how we sense that, and separation. So maybe we can close with that. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes again. Take a breath. Let go of any thoughts of vibration or ideas, sense of separation. Just let it go. Just let yourself be. Notice that without any effort at all, oneness and unity consciousness are present. Within you, without you, around you. Notice you don't have to do anything with this. Just notice that because this is a vibration outside of the self. Notice that it takes work right now to be separate. It takes effort to be separate. Just notice that. And then come back to oneness. Your natural oneness is your natural state. Unity consciousness, or what we call the upper room, is your natural state. Rest in that for a moment. If any thoughts or distractions come in, just let them float away like summer breeze. Oneness, unity consciousness. I am one. I am one with the Creator. Everything, including myself, is an expression of grace, of oneness. I carry this sense of unity with me as this day unfolds. I don't have to think about it. All I need do is remind myself occasionally as the day unfolds that I am one. I am one. I am one. The rhythm of your breathing, the beating of your heart. Deep breath. Stretch. You can open your eyes when you're ready. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Jerry.
Enjoy the sunshine.
Yes. Blessed day.
Blessed we are.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. See ya.